Take your Bibles, if you would, turn to John chapter 7. We'll talk about that a little bit this evening, John chapter 7. Preacher, thank you so much for letting us come by. It's a privilege to be able to be here, and I know it probably would have been more convenient for you all to just say, well, come back another time, but thanks for letting us swing by. We enjoy being here. Always enjoy being with folks of your church anyway, getting to know some of them a little bit anyway. Yeah. But I know some of them better than others.
Yes.
And I know some of them much better than others. Now, would you like to hear a David Pritchett story?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now, they have the dearest, sweetest mother.
Yes.
He has a twin. Y'all, I'm sure, have met the twin.
Yes.
And they have the dearest, sweetest mother. They have a good dad. He and I were friends. He was in the Navy. I was in the Army, so we always gave each other a hard time. And the twins, I gave them private lessons for years, and I still can't tell them apart. The only way I can tell them apart is if David's looking at me, his ears stick out like Dumbo the elephant. And so if they're there both looking at me, I can tell. So I'm teaching basic science at our academy, and they are in that class. That class had 27 kids in it. 24 of them were boys. The two Pritchetts, my son Mick, Todd Upshendick, some of you may know from Kite River Baptist Camp, Austin Marriott, just all kind of type A kind of guys. And so I'm in there, and actually I ended up, the teacher they had couldn't handle it and left. So they said, Brother Hall, can you go in and teach these guys? I said, sure, I can do that. I love science anyway, and so general science, boy, that's just a fun one. So I'm in there, and I know all these kids, and I say, listen, you can sit anywhere you want to, I don't care, but if you get in trouble, I'm going to nail you. Everybody understands. And everybody. And I said, except David and Anthony. I said, Anthony, you must always be on my left of David. I don't care where you sit in the class, you can sit anywhere you want to, but Anthony has to be on my left of David. Do you guys understand? Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Now, what do I know is going to happen ultimately? Oh, sure, they'll swap. I know that. But the next day, I come into class. Mick, here. Todd, here. Austin, here. Anthony, here. He. David, here. He. Of course, all the kids in class could tell them apart. I couldn't, but I knew. And I said, you guys couldn't even give me credit for one day. One day. And a bomb went off. And frankly, I was looking for an opportunity for a bomb to go off just so they knew who the alpha male in the room was going to be. And we had no problem after that. And I've never shared this with them. At the end of class, both of them came to me with tears in their eyes apologizing because they didn't mean anything by it, and I knew. Apologizing. They felt that they had offended me. And they turned and walked out, and I had a little tear coming out of my eye because I gave them such a hard time for it. So I never shared that with anybody before. But so we go back a long way, preacher, and I hope everything's gone all right for you all here with them. So, amen. Lisa, it's always good to see you again. So been praying for you. All right, you're in John chapter 7. I'm going to get right into this because it is so appropriate for the day and hour that we live today, and also for the song that the ladies sang, having to do with making a difference. John chapter 7. And in this passage, Jesus and some of the disciples are up in Galilee. The Feast of the Tabernacles are getting ready to take place down in Jerusalem. And so they're looking at heading down there. They know there's all kinds of problems because people are after Jesus, want to kill him. And he says, well, you guys go on down. I'm going to hang around here. They leave. He ends up going on down secretly, teaches in the temple. The religious leaders are really, really unhappy with him, and they're trying to capture him so that they'd be able to kill him. Go to verse number 30. Then they sought to take him, but no man laid hands on him because his hour was not yet come. So religious leaders are trying to get Jesus, capture him, because they want to put him on a false trial, but ended up having him condemned to death. Verse 31, and many of the people believed on him and said, when Christ cometh, will he do more miracles than these which this man hath done? They're saying, look, what do you want the Messiah to do? This guy's performed miracle after miracle after miracle. What do you expect the Messiah to do greater than this? 32, the Pharisees heard that the people murmured such things concerning him, and the Pharisees and the chief priests sent officers to take him. So now they're sending military guys out to capture Jesus and bring him in. Now jump over to verse number 40. Many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said of a truth, this is the prophet. Now, what's happening here is there are groups of people that are describing who Jesus is and who he means to them, who they perceive him to be. The first group of people says, many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying said, of a truth, this is the prophet. This idea of a prophet means he's a good teacher. They didn't necessarily believe he was the Messiah, but they were willing to admit that he was a good teacher. Now, folks, you have to understand, however, there is no room for Jesus to be classified simply as a good teacher. We don't have time to go into it this evening, but Jesus repeatedly stated that he was God. He said, I and my Father are one. He who has seen the Father hath seen me. And neither is there salvation in any other. There's no other name under heaven given among men whereby you must be saved, referring to Jesus. There is no question. They wanted to kill him for blasphemy, and blasphemy was declaring that he was God. So if Jesus declared he was God, it's a very simple equation. If he said he was God, but he wasn't and knew he wasn't, what is he? The greatest liar in the history of the world, because millions and millions of people have followed his teachings. If he said he was God, knew he wasn't, he was a liar. Then if you've got him saying he was God, and he believed he was God, but he wasn't, now what is he? He's a kook. That's like David back there saying, I'm Superman, watch me jump off this building. Yeah, sure, go ahead. You're nuts anyway. You might as well jump off the building. He's a nut. If Jesus would have said and believed that he was God, even if he wasn't, then he's a nut. So what's left? He said he was God, he believed he was God, and he was God. Folks, there is no room, as the Muslims believe, that Jesus was a good prophet, a little bit under Abraham, but Jesus was a little bit under Muhammad, but Jesus was a good teacher. There is no room for Jesus to simply be a good teacher. He's either a liar, the most notorious liar in the history of the world, he's a nut, or he was the Messiah. That's the only options there were. So these folks here had a very shallow understanding of who Jesus was, but they said, you know, he teaches good things, he's done some miracles, he's okay. Take a look at verse 41. Others said, this is the Christ. These folks were admitting that they believed what Jesus said when he said he was the Messiah. They are saying, this is the Messiah. That's what that phrase is talking about here. But right next to that, but some said, shall Christ come out of Galilee? This group of people were the skeptics. This group of people were the ones that didn't believe in Jesus and were verbal about it. This group of people were the ones that said in this passage here, shall Christ come out of Galilee? Shall the Messiah come from Nazareth or come from Galilee? See, what the problem was, what was Jesus' nickname, if you will? Jesus of Nazareth. The prophecy in Micah, though, said that the Messiah was going to come from where? In Judah, that's right, the nation of Judah. And they said, well, this is Jesus of Nazareth. He can't be the Messiah. The Messiah didn't come from Nazareth, and the Messiah is supposed to come from Judah. And as a matter of fact, in the passage a little bit later, in one of the previous Gospels in there, where it's referring to, doth anything good come from Nazareth? They were not condemning Nazareth. They were referring to that prophecy that said the Messiah would come from Judah, not Galilee. And Nazareth is in Galilee. So they simply were saying, this can't be the Messiah because he's Jesus of Nazareth, and the Messiah doesn't come from Nazareth, which is up in Galilee, but he's supposed to come from Bethlehem, which is down in Judea. So it was a misunderstanding of who Jesus was. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, but most of his early childhood was up in Nazareth. So even though he was referred to as Jesus of Nazareth, he was born in Bethlehem in fulfillment to the prophecies that were there. So when they made the statement, shall Christ come out of Galilee, they didn't understand that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. They had a false assumption here. Verse 42. Hath not the scriptures said that Christ cometh of the seed of David and out of this town of Bethlehem where David was? That's a referral again to Micah. So there was a division among the people because of him. And by the way, everywhere that Jesus went, he caused a division. He forced people into making decisions about who he was, and in so doing, ticked some people off and blessed some other people. And everywhere he went, it caused a division, just like the passage says. So there was a division among the people because of him. And some of them would have taken him, but no man laid hands on him. It wasn't his time yet. Then came the officers to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto him, why have ye not brought him? So the officers that were sent out to capture Jesus came back empty-handed. And the religious leaders saying, what are you doing? We told you to go get this guy and bring him back. And here you are without him. The officers answered, never a man spake like this man. They said, hey, boss, we know you sent us out there. But I'm here to tell you, we heard him speak. And we heard what others said. And we're just concerned, maybe you better lay off this guy a little bit. These guys were starting to have a little bit of a real, I don't know they ever got saved, but there was a realization that there was something about Jesus with these officers that were sent out to capture him, and they came back empty-handed because they wanted nothing to do with arresting Jesus and bringing him back. They said right there, never a man spake like this man. It reminds me of the centurion at the foot of the cross when Jesus ends up dying. And this guy who's been there probably all day long and has seen everything that's going on, just like this Roman soldier would be, just standing there, and he says, surely this man was the Son of God. Just simple, straightforward, and these guys are going, never a man spake like this man. Think you'd better take it easy on him. The officers answered, never man spake like this man. Then answered them the Pharisees, are ye also deceived? These religious leaders looked at these guys, the ones that they had entrusted to go out and catch Jesus, who came back, I don't hope that's not me, came back empty-handed and said, never man spake like this man. What did they say? Then answered them the Pharisees, are ye also deceived? Have any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed him? But this people who knoweth not the law are cursed. They said, what's the matter with you guys? Has he gotten to you too? I mean, only the uneducated people out there are the ones that's believing in this guy. And you guys obviously are deceived. There's a problem with you. You've been deceived by this. Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees, any of the educated people believe in Jesus? No, that's what they were mentioning. Have any of the rulers of the Pharisees believed on him? But this people who knoweth not the law, the ones that aren't educated, they're the ones that are believing in this low-life guy over here. So they are ridiculing. And by the way, a lot of times if you're out talking to people, out soul winning, knocking doors, whatever the case may be, or even more than that, at your place of work, you ever had somebody that they ran out of arguments, so they just call you a name? Well, you're just stupid. What, that's the best you got? You know, and one of the things I really appreciate about our college students, they really, this year, a lot of them have gotten a vision to reach their coworkers. We've had a bunch of people come and visit church as a result of our college students inviting them to come. And testimony after testimony was they had answers that those people did not. And they wanted to hear more. And so what's happening is we're getting the idea that there's groups of people that are forming here in terms of their relationship with Jesus. And this one it says, but this people who knoweth not the law are cursed. The uneducated, the stupid ones, only with low lives, the other side of the track people are the only ones that really believe in this individual. Are ye also deceived? And folks, the simple message tonight is what happened with Jesus in this passage in terms of his relationship to other people around him, is exactly what is happening in our country today. There are people out there that just, yeah, well, Jesus, I guess, was a good guy. There's a superficial knowledge of who he is. There are people out there that are believers. Sadly, too many believers are not making any kind of a stand. They're not willing to be a witness at work. They believe Jesus, but that's as far as they're going to go with it. But then you also have this batch that's the skeptics. And in our country right now, that batch is growing. Those that would ridicule and condemn, you see it all the time. And I'm not trying to make a political statement of any kind here. But folks, we're heading into a period of time right now where Christianity is under attack. and it's under attack by our government that's out there right now. If you're following the news at all, some of the things that are being passed as far as bills are concerned, or being rammed down our throat in Illinois, we're fighting right now an education bill that basically would give the state of Illinois the right to close private schools if they don't agree with our health standards that we're having for our kids. Then we're fighting that bill. Yeah, for Christian schools and homeschoolers, by the way. They can come into your homeschool and says, your health standards are not adequate. We're taking your kids. And like I said, all you got to do is turn on the news and you find how Christians are being put under attack. It reminds me of the passage, Elijah and Ahab. And Elijah appears to Ahab. Here's Elijah, the representative of everything that's good and right about the nation of Israel. And you have Ahab, everything that is wicked and undone and anti-God. And Elijah stands before Ahab, and Ahab says, "Art thou he that troubleth Israel?" The representative of everything bad is blaming Elijah for what's going on in the country. And folks, that's exactly what's happening in our country today. There are people pointing fingers at us as Christians and even as moral people and saying, you guys are the ones that are the problems. You guys are the ones that are causing all the issue around it, because we believe that people, if they're going to eat, they ought to work. Because we believe it's the parents' responsibility to raise their kids. Because we believe, frankly, in an economic system that the Bible teaches about how all of us ought to eat our own bread and prosper as a result of it. And yet the finger is being, we're being blamed because you guys won't allow abortions. You're allowing people that will suffer the rest of their lives to be born. We're being blamed for every level of social indiscretion that you can think of out there. And these people here that are skeptics were coming after those others around there. These religious leaders, that's exactly what they were doing. They were blaming those officers that came back who were just amazed at who Jesus was and what he had to say. And they're saying, you guys are just riffraff. You guys believe in all these uneducated people? You ever try to talk to somebody about evolution? It shocks them. It shocks them. The products of public school. And I went to public school. And it took me a while to understand what the issue was. But then after a while, I'm going, man, how can any reasonable person actually believe in evolution when you stop to think about it, you know? And yet you talk to some people out there, they are so ingrained with it and with the concept that man had to have come here absent of God. It's an a-God, an anti-God position, the whole idea of evolution. And by the way, the whole idea of evolution is the ultimate in racism. We don't have time to go into it tonight, but the concept of evolution is where the whole racist concept came from, not from moral Bible-believing Christians. And so in this passage, we've got again where the Pharisees say, "Are ye also deceived?" In America, we have the same thing happening. They discount you. And again, one of the fun things about our students, they are peers with the people they work with. And when a peer says something, you kind of have to listen to them. These guys here were just making blanket statements. You guys are stupid. You're just following along with what all the other uneducated people have to say here. Then we get down to verse 48. "Have any of the rulers or of the Pharisees believed him? But this people who knoweth not the law are cursed." Verse 50. "Nicodemus saith unto them," he that came to Jesus by night being one of them. So Nicodemus is in this group of religious leaders. And he stands up and says, one of them that came, he's one of them that came to Jesus. And by the way, I think sometimes Nicodemus gets a bum rap. I personally think the reason that Nicodemus came to Jesus by night, there's a huge crowd. And he goes, "This is stupid. Why should I hang around here? I'll come back tonight." And the reason I say that is because when you take a look at the events that happened at the time of the cross, who were the only guys that had anything to do with the whole scene that was there? It wasn't the disciples. Sorry, fellows, the women were more bold than the guys were. But there were two guys that are mentioned around the time of the crucifixion as being present and active in what's going on. Joseph of Arimathea, because that was Jesus' tomb, and Nicodemus. And so I'm not so sure Nicodemus deserves this bum rap that he gives. He's just a chicken. That's why he went to Jesus at night. I'm sure he wasn't stupid about it either. But for the most part, I think he was probably a pretty brave individual. And Nicodemus saith unto them, he that came to Jesus by night being one of them, doth our law judge any man before it hear him and know what he doeth? They answered and said unto him, art thou also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee ariseth no prophet. So Nicodemus stands up in this crowd, this batch of religious leaders. They're getting all worked up out of anger for who Jesus is, and they can't seem to get their hands on him, and these officers came back without him, and they're just ticked off. They got to get this guy and put a stop to the influence that he has in that area around there. And one of their own, Nicodemus, stands up in the middle of them and says, hold on a minute. What do you guys think you're doing? You can't try somebody without evidence. What we're doing here is absolutely wrong. And what happened? Verse 51. Doth our law judge any man before it hear him and know what he doeth? They, the religious leaders, answered and said unto him, art thou also of Galilee? What are you, stupid too? Have you lost your mind? Are you one of these lowlifes? Have they gotten to you? Remember that reference to Galilee? He can't be the Messiah. He's from Galilee, Jesus of Nazareth, and he's not from Judea, Bethlehem specifically. So are you also one of them? They look at him, and they don't have anything they can tell him or get on him about, and so they basically said, yeah, well, you're just stupid. What kind of an argument is that? Nicodemus gets up, quotes the law, how they can't do what they're planning on doing, and the religious leaders turn to Nicodemus and go, what's the matter with you? You're just stupid too. They resort, it's called an ad hominem argument. It's where you don't have anything that you can say that makes sense, so you just ridicule somebody's character or name or whatever. And that's exactly what they did to Nicodemus. Art thou also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee ariseth no prophet. Yeah, they're right, but Jesus was not of Galilee. It was Jesus of Bethlehem. So here's what the situation is. It said up in verse number 43, there was a division. Jesus is healing a bunch of people. And he's in Jerusalem now, the Feast of Tabernacles, and they really want to get a hold of him. By the way, a neat study sometime is to show that Jesus got crucified when he chose to be crucified. And he wasn't going to let him push it too soon. He knew exactly when he was supposed to be crucified, and he manipulated even lost religious leaders into holding off until he was supposed to. They really didn't want him to be crucified when these big feasts and things were coming up with Passover and whatnot. And so Jesus was in control of the situation. That's why they couldn't get a hold of him. I mentioned that a little bit earlier up there. But you've got Jesus causing all of this division among the people around here. The religious leaders are starting to lose their influence. And so they say, we've got to do something because the people are starting to believe this guy and all the things that he's doing. Says, we got to capture him. We got to do something. And one person in the middle of them stands up and says, hold it. You can't do this. And what happens? He answered and said unto him, art thou also of Galilee? Search and look, for out of Galilee ariseth no prophet. And every man went into his own house. What happened? Nicodemus gets up. Hey, we can't do this. This isn't right. And they said, well, you're just stupid, dummy. And they went home. One guy stood up and shut them down. Folks, the point that I'm trying to make today is that in the circles you traffic, you're going to have skeptics, you're going to have unbelievers, you're going to have people out there that threaten the way of life we enjoy as Americans here. And it may only take one person to shut them down and make a difference. See, the problem with Preacher and I and other people are in full-time ministry, on any given day, I hardly even see a lost person. But those of you that work jobs, homemakers, out and about in the community, every day you rub shoulders with people that are lost, and for the most part, looking for answers. The vast majority of people we rub shoulders with every day are like lemmings. They follow the first one off a cliff. Whoever has the loudest voice, whoever has the last word, that's who they believe and who they listen to. And all they're waiting for is one person to stand up and say, wait a minute, that's not true. And I can't tell you how many testimonies we have of our students that have made a stand in their office, and people will come up to them later and say, you know what? I believe like you. They would have never said it publicly otherwise. They're going to follow what the news media say. They're going to follow what the atheists say. They're going to follow what the anti-God crowd says until somebody stands up. Because, you know, I honestly believe the vast majority of Americans are still conservative, moral people that understand that this nation was set up based on the Bible. Now, they may not be able to verbalize it, but they understand this country was set up on a moral basis. You take a look at our founding fathers, and individual after individual says the secret to the success of this nation is going to be a moral, righteous people that are willing to do the right thing. That's the only way democracy and constitutional republic that we have will survive. The vast majority, I think, of Americans are there. But the problem is, folks, they listen to the loudest and last voice. And we as Christians are backing off. There's a time when we would stand up and make a difference. There's a time when we would disagree. But increasingly, it seems that Christians in our country are just saying, well, whatever, there's nothing I can do about it anyway. There was an election, I apologize, it just came to my head. Man, was it in New York? Someplace there was an election that was made, the difference was made with two votes. In our place, in the local elections that we had, there was a guy running for Elgin Township Supervisor. That's our city supervisor. And we got behind him as a church, and most of our college is in the district that he was at. He was a good guy. I don't think he's saved yet, but we're looking for the opportunity to be able to witness to him. But man, he came to church several times. He just enjoys it. And he's a very conservative, moral individual. We got behind him. And the difference was made by about 50 to 70 votes. And our college had more than that voted. So the bottom line is, if our college students wouldn't have gone and voted, he would not have won. Folks, we can make a difference. Now, I'm not saying, and this whole message is not a political message. It's not meant to be that way. But what I am saying is a few people can make a difference. Right. Years ago, we were in Iowa City, Iowa. And I was teaching ROTC there. And Cindy went to the store. She goes to the store, Kmart, I think. Walmart? Kmart. And she goes through the checkout. And at the checkout was the swimsuit edition of Sports Illustrated. Folks, I love sports. Used to get Sports Illustrated until they came out with that pornography. But it was right there at checkout where everybody's little kid comes by and watches it, and she saw it there. She goes home and called like three of her friends and said, call Kmart and complain about that being there. Well, she didn't think anything about it after that. A week or two later, she goes back and they're not there. So the little gal that was working the cash register, she goes, what happened to the swimsuit editions of Sports Illustrated? And the little gal said, oh, we had bunches and bunches of people calling and complaining that they were there, so we moved them back to the magazine section. Bunches and bunches? Bunches and bunches? Folks, we can make a difference. We can make a difference. But like I said, people that you work with have developed a relationship with you, even if they give you a hard time. And by the way, sometimes those are the ones that are closest to being saved, because they're trying to find out if there's something real about what we represent, about what we're all about. But the folks that you work with have, some of you, even if they're here tonight, have probably worked in the same place for 5, 10, 15, or more years. The people there know you, they appreciate you, they know who you are. And if you were to make a stand, they would think about it. If I or your preacher walked into that place of business and started talking about the Bible or anything conservative, they wouldn't have anything to do with us because we have no relationship with them. But you do. And the folks in our churches, for the most part, can make a difference for the cause of Christ. Just like Nicodemus, just like one individual stood up and made a difference, that can happen today in our society for the cause of Christ if Christians are willing to do that. The problem is, Christians aren't standing up. We aren't standing up. And folks, we are at a very pivotal point in our country as far as our religious liberties are concerned, and we had better decide we're going to start making a difference. If we don't, we got a problem on our hands. So the simple story here is this passage in John chapter 7 parallels what's happening in our country today. One person can make a difference. One person. Are you going to be that one person? Well, I don't, man, I'm afraid if I say something, it'll be something stupid. Folks, you're far more in tune with truth because of attending a good local church than these people out there ever will be. And all you got to do is make a statement sometimes and cause them to stop and think. I remember when I went to the University of Iowa, it staggered students there. This was years ago. It staggered students when some of us that were Bible-believing Christians and creation believers would make a comment, well, I believe the earth's only 8,000 to 10,000 years old. And it was like their world just fell apart. They had never heard an articulate individual voice that position. All they had ever heard in their public school, all they had ever heard in their homes and their families, all they had ever heard in their neighborhood was how evolution was the only way that everything could have got here, had nothing to do with God. And when rational individuals would make a comment, well, I believe in creation, and here's why. I can't tell you how many times people went, oh, wow, I never thought of that. But somebody's got to stand up and make a difference. Nicodemus, in this story, was that individual that stood up. And he listened to them insult him and berate him. And then watched as they just shrugged and went home. He shut her down. One man did that. Are you going to be that one person? Are you going to be willing to make a difference? And folks, you don't have to be some kind of crusader out there, you know, if you want to, knock yourself out. But how about we just make a stand? When somebody makes a comment at work or your place of business or where you're shopping or in other cases, somebody makes a stupid anti-God statement, don't let them get away with it. Somebody's going to use foul language around you, don't let them get away with it. Let them know that there are people out there that are still Bible-believing Christians that believe in what God's Word says and it is a key as far as our country and the friends and neighbors that we have and family members around us. Let's make a difference, just like Nicodemus did. Heads bowed and eyes closed. Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for simple stories like this. Sometimes we read them as we go through our Bible reading. Sometimes we read them, but we don't have any idea the depth and the application of it to where we live today. Here's a simple passage, Lord, where people were falling or succumbing to the idea that Jesus was just some kind of crackpot and uneducated people were following him. And yet in the middle of this highly educated crowd, one man stood up that was one of them and disputed what they were saying, and it shut them down. And Lord, we need a whole room full of one persons that are willing to stand in their place of work, their place of business, where they shop, whatever it may be. Help us to be willing to stand and make a difference. Truly, as the gal's saying, probably the greatest mission field in the world right now, at this point in time, is right here in America. We have to make a difference so America can continue to be the light she needs to be. So, Father, we just pray that you'll challenge all of us with that. In just a minute, the piano's going to play a little bit. Whether you're here or at home, you may just want to take a minute and say, Lord, you know what? I want to dedicate myself to making a stand where I'm at. Even though I might be a little uncomfortable with it, I'm going to make a stand. And I'm not going to let folks get away with untruth or let people get away with biased discussion or speech. I'm going to challenge them a little bit. And in so doing, they'll all of a sudden start to maybe believe in the reality of who Jesus was. And as they're pondering the truth that you have articulated and start to share the gospel with them, they'll be receptive to it. And so, Father, I just pray you'll challenge us with that, the thought tonight, about making a difference. As the piano plays, maybe you need to kneel right where you are and just pause for a minute and ask the Lord to help you make a difference.